everybody. You are listening to Voice of Vashon at 101.9 Vashon Island, Washington. And you're listening to Stirring the Pot. And I'm your host, Linda Nygaard, here with my co-host, Tom Conway.
Howdy, howdy.
Hi, Tom.
How's it going?
Nice to see you.
Good to see
it's
you.
It's always good to see you.
I know.
Yeah. And the ever trusty compadre of ours, Susan McCabe.
I know.
Is manning the board today for us, and she will be telling us all about her wonderful cooking experiences later.
That would be staffing the board or engineering the board?
I was just going to say.
I'm not manning it.
She's not gender specific.
Oh, geez, I'm so sorry. I did that. That's bad.
I know.
But I say I man the mic. Well, I guess I woman the mic.
You know, I'm staying out of this.
Yeah, you stay out of that. Anyway, hi, Susan. She's not talking to me right now, so that's okay. Hey, so let's get started, Tom.
Yeah. How was your week?
Gosh, it was really, really busy. I had a lot of interesting things going on. I made a trip to, I discovered, you know, I've been around Vashon for a long time, but I haven't done a lot of exploring of Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
This is not my thing. But I went with a friend and discovered.
Plus, it's also nice when you have did you have a chauffeur?
Oh, yes, I did.
Chauffeurs
and that was
are the
so
best.
Wonderful. She was just wonderful. And she knows exactly where to go and what to do and how to do it, you know, because she's been doing
it
for years.
If you drive me, I will go.
Yeah, exactly. happily. I may even buy you lunch if you drive. Yeah. Anyway, she took me to Big John's Pacific
Food Importers.
Yes. And I think they just call it Big John's now. And I had never been there before. Now, you have been there and you know what they have. Oh, my Lord. I was so surprised. There, I did a little bit of reading after I left there to find out who they were and what they did and all of that. Their cheesecake alone is 30 feet long.
That's my kind of cheesecake.
Oh, my Lord. And they, that's the second time I said that. Sorry. They encourage you to taste different cheeses. It's not a big pain in the rear end for them to feed you a little slice of cheese so you can know what you're eating.
Linda, I haven't been there since they moved. They moved to a new location.
They did.
Where is it?
I don't know. It's in Soto.
Generally speaking.
Like, it's in Soto.
Soto, okay.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name of the street right now, but we can look it up.
I'm looking it up right now.
Yeah, I do. Because I should have done that.
Oh, it's funny because the original one was on Dearborn.
Right. They're back in the neighborhood they started in.
Oh, they're on Dearborn, which is where they started. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that's a great story. And what I know about them is that it's a over 50-year-old company started by the dad.
Yeah. John Croce.
And he started selling feta and olive oil out of his 1957 Plymouth Valiant that was green.
Uh-huh. Oh, gosh.
And, you know, that area is known as Garlic Gulch.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I did because it's sort of like a little Forrest Gump moment where I crossed paths with the Croces when I first moved to Seattle.
Oh, lucky you.
A mutual friend grew up with them. And it was sort of like there was a Serbo-Croatian and Italian community.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of music and dancing and I got invited to a party over at the Croce's house with my friend, and they had it in their backyard and it was like everything good old neighborhood Italian ethnic, you know, party should be. And wine was flowing and people all played music. And I thought I had struck gold on that invitation.
Well, you know, in the beginning, he really just sold to his neighbors because they were Italians and they knew they knew the olive oil and they knew they needed the good olives.
Yeah.
You know, and so then word of mouth started spreading and people started lining up at his car.
Mm-hmm.
And then he opened a little shop. I don't know the specific history of it, but I would love to. And at some point, maybe we can have one or the other of the girls on the radio.
Yeah, Kathy. Kathy is managing it. Her sister, Holly.
And they have a brother, too.
A brother. And I didn't know him that well. What was great, too, about in the old days when it was on Dearborn and it was in this old warehouse, it was sort of the antithesis of what a lot of food places are nowadays. It was wonderfully real. You know, real, it's like you went in and all the herbs were in these giant buckets that you
had
to...
Did they have pickle barrels then?
Yeah, they had pickle
olive
barrels.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they don't have that anymore.
And it was just, you felt like, oh, this is...
Yeah, but I, you know, I don't... Rich. I don't... recall having been anywhere that had that many different types of pasta.
Did you try? Pasta. Oh, I thought you were gonna say cheese because I was gonna ask.
Oh,
you
I
what,
did. Yeah.
What cheese did you try that you liked?
It's called. It's a C R A or O, M O I X.
Oh.
And it's French. It's cow milk. It's a little like a brie and a little like a...
Oh, like a triple cream.
Oh, yeah, but it's
Cremu.
Not... Hi, Susan. No, it's not like brie. Its texture is completely different
no,
from brie.
No, it sounds
it's
like a
soft,
like a San Andre, you know?
Yeah. Well, a little bit. Yeah. A little bit. I love San Andre.
Like it's almost like you think you're eating butter a little bit.
And nuts. It's nutty, nutty, nutty.
Yeah.
It's so good. So I bought that and... I rationed myself for 3 days, but it's gone now. And white anchovies and beautiful bucatini.
Oh, you're a big anchovy fan, as I recall.
I love anchovies.
What are you going to do with the anchovies?
Well, I used them the other night. I made, we're going to talk about later that New York Times thing about using spaghetti noodles for Asian. And I did some chili noodles using spaghetti with tomato paste and some oyster sauce and some soy sauce and some sesame. I don't remember the recipe exactly, but white anchovies.
Sounds yummy.
Oh, it was good.
Were they part of the dressing or part of the salad?
No, it isn't a salad. It's pasta.
Pasta. Were they part of the pasta?
Just you make the sauce and then you put the, it's just a little bit of sauce. You know, it's a garlic sauce, basically, with a little bit of soy sauce and a little bit of oyster sauce.
Oh, I'm thinking, are you asking, like, are they whole or are they smashed
up? Oh, whole.
They're whole. Okay.
Yeah, I put them whole in there. I don't know, maybe I should have chopped them, but I kind of liked
them. No, I like them that way.
Yeah, I love them. So that and some really wonderful olives. And, you know, you can spend a fortune in there. But what I also found is that, you know, their prices are really reasonable. They don't sell like 4 slices of cheese. You have to buy 1/2 pound of cheese. It used to be 1 pound minimum, but they will
more toward
have a
more toward the retail and consumer, because before it was more of a wholesale place.
right And so, you know, anyway, that was a big adventure.
And you can
for
buy
me.
Big anybody who uses chocolate to bake with, like big blocks of chocolate. They have really good big blocks of
and
chocolate.
They have gallon jars of spices and spice blends, the likes of which I have never seen.
Yeah.
The sort of blends of spices that they put together that I don't know about. And so now I want to go back and write those down and do some research and see how you use them. It was a wonderful experience. And I think it was a little vacation. You know, I got off the island. I got to go see some new sites, meet some new people.
That's great, because you did it the other week or so when you went to Federal Way. Was it Koreatown?
Koreatown, Lakewood. Tacoma. Yeah, yeah. Well, I did that again yesterday.
With your friend?
Yes. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, had Korean for lunch and a different friend that I went with the first time. Yeah.
Well, you know, I was in Seattle this week helping a friend of mine who... doesn't have a truck, and she needed some help with some stuff from second use and earthwise salvage.
Yeah.
So I said, you know, if you buy me lunch, I'm pretty much
I'm easy.
I prostitute myself for anything that is a unique lunch, and so that I normally don't get, which would be peanut butter and jelly sandwich, or a hot dog. So we ended up going to, on the way back, we went through Georgetown. And Georgetown has so many good little restaurants, you know, and little food trucks. But one of my favorite was from a friend of mine. She turned me on to it. And she lives up on Beacon Hill. And she said they practically have, you know, worn the path out to this place. And it's Donabore Station. And it's a Japanese little restaurant. And you can get really good, like, poke bowls and really good teriyaki. But we got this great salmon poke bowl, which is, you know, fresh raw salmon on top of rice with this really good seaweed. And then the spicy sauce that comes to the side.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
So you went to Japan.
I went to Japan.
I went to Italy.
And then we cut through White
Center. Oh, and Korea.
Then we cut through White Center, which I'm not quite sure.
Oh, I love White Center.
I do too.
Have you seen how much rejuvenation is going on in
there? It's
going to
become the new Wallingford, I think.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Which makes me very happy because Wallingford's different now.
Wallingford is no fun. Well, I shouldn't say it. I'm sorry. I used to live in Wallingford. Yeah. My old house was there. But it's,
but it's different now.
It's different. Yeah.
So speaking of different, how about we sprang forward? With the calendar.
This is where we show our age.
Oh my goodness. It's made me tired all week.
It's only Tuesday. It's true. It totally drains you. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing what one little hour can do. There's a great, and I thought I was the only one that was, you know, I thought there were a few of us complaining about it. I didn't realize, mm-hmm. basically it is the norm for anyone over the age of 26. And there's a great, because I realized that when I saw a New Yorker cartoon this week, and it was a freak show or a circus was mm-hmm. the backdrop. And there's just a normal looking Joe, you know, with his mustache and thick glasses. And he was a display for the only man who has not complained about the time change.
Oh, he'll be in isolation for
He's
sure.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, the good news is that I have to share with you, you know, we all gripe about it. And every year I know I have said, why isn't something being done about this? Mm-hmm. Everybody hates it. And why don't we change it? What is this? Because it's inappropriate. And I found
there
out
are more heart attacks when the time changes.
Oh,
more
stress levels.
When the
dogs and animals do not notice. They don't know.
No, they don't care.
They want to eat when they wanted to eat.
Right. And it doesn't matter what time it is.
No.
I know. Well, you'll be happy to know that the U.S. Senate has approved a bill that will make daylight savings time permanent in 2023.
That really is remarkable.
It's really quite wonderful.
My whole life this has been talked about.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I ain't no spring chicken.
Well, I just think that's pretty good.
I think it's pretty awesome.
I'm pretty excited.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm happy about that.
Yeah.
I don't know if excited is the right word.
Well, I think it's
too tired to be excited.
Yeah.
Once I get a nap in, I'll be excited.
Yeah. So another thing I did this week is I made preserved lemons. Do you ever make preserved lemons?
You know, it is one of those things that sort of followed me throughout my culinary career, which mm-hmm. was just cooking in my kitchen. But mm-hmm. where people always make them and I never get them, I've never tried them, and I've never done them. But I feel like they sort of mock me because I haven't. And
okay, well, we're gonna change that.
Oh,
Tom.
Good.
I'll share some with you.
What makes them special?
Well, I learned mm-hmm. from Molly O'Neill of the New York Times in the early 90s. And she wrote an article that I still remember. I cut it out and I still have it. Remember when the New York Times used to have that beautiful magazine that came every Sunday?
Right, and it was on the back page. And
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It was so good, so rich. Anyway, she wrote an article about preserved lemons. And as I was reading the article, I was falling more and more in love. It was the most seductive kind of food writing I had ever read.
Hmm.
And I thought, I'm going to try these out. So I did. And really, her recipe is very simple. Some people's are complicated, but this is what I do. You take a lemon and you quarter it almost through the little nub at the bottom, but mm-hmm. you leave it whole and just quarter it so it flaps open.
Oh, okay.
And then on the flaps, on the bare lemon pulp that's showing, mm-hmm. you rub salt. Put a bunch of salt on that. Then close it back up. And put it in a jar, and then just keep doing the same thing, as many lemons as you can in your one jar. However, if it's a pint, it's probably two lemons.
And you don't add any liquid to it?
Yes, you do.
Oh.
After you pack them all in there first, mm-hmm. so you know that they're in there. Because you put the liquid in first, you're going to get a mess.
What's
so,
the liquid?
The liquid is lemon juice.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah, so you have to have a lot of lemons,
okay.
you know, and you mm-hmm. squeeze the lemon juice, and then bay leaf. I make a little more than a pint at a time, and mm-hmm. I use a bay leaf and about five or six cardamom pods. Salt. You put about an inch of salt, 3/4 of an inch of salt in the bottom of the jar,
mm-hmm.
and then fill it up with lemon juice, and shake it a little bit. Just kind of roll it. And here's the seductive part. Okay, these are the most precious tasting things you'll ever taste. I love them. And when you're curing them, they take about 6 weeks.
Refrigerated, unrefrigerated?
The first 24 to 48 hours, depending on your threshold of pain, you leave them at room temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while during the day, you just go by and give them a little swish, just a little bath. You don't shake them. Mm-hmm. You don't want to disturb them, but you're soothing them and encouraging them is what you're doing.
For our listeners, she's doing it like a brandy sniffer. This sort of she's doing this lovely sort of lilting swirl.
And so then you have to decide what you're going to cook. Mm-hmm. And I experimented the very first time with a chicken tagine, mm-hmm, with preserved lemon, and it has green olives and lots of onions and lots of Middle Eastern spices. And oh my goodness. Then I did swordfish with preserved lemons. Yes.
Do you rinse off the salt, or does it all go, do you just sort of shake it off and put it in
what,
there?
It depends, yeah, on what you're doing. Okay. Like for, the tagine, I don't use any of the pulp. Mm-hmm. So you peel the pulp off the peel.
Oh.
And then chop it up pretty fine.
Okay.
And put it in there. Some recipes call for using the pulp as well.
Okay.
So it just kind of depends. And really, if you just take some of that rind, chop it up a little bit, and put it in your salad dressing, it's to die for. It's a whole new taste sensation.
I'm definitely, my friend Kasana just gave me a jar, so I'm going to try some
of
hers.
Good. Yeah. And you, I eat them. I mean, I have to have bites, uh-huh, of them. They're so good. They're very salty. They're very lemony, but
I do that with orange peel, but then I'm more of the sweet guy.
Yeah, but your orange peel is candied, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, I like it too.
It's good.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, you know, that was a big deal. I like to do that at least once a year.
I'm growing lemons in my greenhouse.
Yes, I know.
So hopefully one year I'm going to have so many, I'm going to go, Linda,
do something. These
off my hands.
Yes, I would love that. I'd be happy to. And they last in the fridge. I've had them 6 or 8 months after they're opened. And
have I told you what I do with lemons for like the opposite of that, like a sweet thing to do with lemons?
Well, your shaker pie?
It's basically, I call it my liquid sunshine.
Oh, it's such a good pie.
I sort of have a stock item that I keep in the freezer, mm-hmm, and I just get a pint jar, and I take two lemons and I seed them, mm-hmm, and then I puree them with 2 cups of sugar. And then I just leave it in the freezer. And when I want it, you just take a spoonful out, and it's good for, you know, anything from pound cake to cookies to salad dressing, if you want a sweeter salad dressing for like a fruit salad. And it's really a great.
So you have lemon flavored sugar?
Yeah. Yeah. It's pulverized. It's almost looks like
like
lemon paste. Yeah. It looks like almost like grout, like, you know, a clear grout.
So like mushed up garlic paste.
That
texture. Wonderful.
It's a really great thing to have. And what's great is it doesn't solidly freeze because there's so much acid. Mm-hmm. So you can always take a spoon.
Chip it.
You don't have to chip it. You just spoon it out and you pop it in your pancake batter or your anything.
I love that.
Yeah. And what's great is there's no bitterness to it really at all. It has just that wonderful citric acid, mm-hmm, essence from the peel and the, mm-hmm, juice, and it's a winner.
I like that idea.
Thanks.
And
I'm a little bit sweet. You're a little bit savory.
Well, I'm a little bit hungry. I should never come on this show unless I've eaten a lot.
Susan, I owe you an apology because I was supposed to make something because you were helped. Because Susan's helping us engineer today, because if we were left to it, it would be radio-free silence for an hour.
Well, you know how that happened, Tom.
Uh-huh.
I was begging Susan to come and do it. I didn't have to beg. She was very gracious in accepting my request.
Yeah. Was I begging? She's the busiest woman on the island.
She is.
She is.
For sure. And I asked her if she'd please do it. And I said, I will make it worth your while. Yeah. And she said, does that mean treats? And I said, we'll see. So then I'm talking to Tom.
So you pawned it off on Tom.
So, you know, both of us owe her an apology.
And I said,
of slaggards.
You know, it's true. I'm a total slaggard because I had the crust made. I made a double crust because,
look at her mouth.
Because I made a shaker lemon pie for a person who won a VIP auction. You know, they bought like a year ago and they called me up and... Which is funny because really anyone on this island could call me up and say I owe them a pie and I go, okay, what auction? And they could make something up and I go, okay, because I don't keep track of it. And so
I remember that.
I go, hey, yeah, this is for the Wilderness Children of Tall Parents Association. I bought a pie. So I had an extra thing of crust, and I was going to make like a little galette, roll it out, put a bunch of apples on it, cinnamon, make it simple, you know. And then I remembered that the next time I remembered I was doing that was when I was walking through the studio door.
Well, you know, it was funny because we talked on the phone this morning, early this morning, which we often do. And we were talking about that, and he said, oh, I'll do something. I'll make something. I have this ready, blah, blah, blah. So we walked through the whole recipe and the whole thing.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe next time.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah.
If there is a next time.
I was just going
to
say.
Well, I'm going to have to double bake. Whatever. That. I guess I'm going to have to come. When I ask, I'll come with something.
I know.
For the ask.
When you said that the treat for her, when you started to say it with a T, but it wasn't a treat. I thought you were going to say Tom. I was the treat. But
well, you're always the treat, Tom.
Apparently, a treat.
You're always the treat.
Yeah, I have to fish for that compliment.
Yeah, you really did. That was embarrassing.
It was.
I know.
I'm a simple man.
Can we talk about coffee for just a second? I know we didn't count on doing that, but I'm having the worst time with coffee. I can't make myself a good cup of coffee anymore, and I'm wondering if it's time for tea, because no coffee tastes good to me anymore. And yesterday I was in some market somewhere, and I bought Ely espresso, which I love, to see if that would work. And I bought a new pot, it's a ceramic drip, one cup at a time thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's really beautiful.
Like sort of the Melita style?
It looks like that, but it's ceramic.
Sweet.
Really pretty. Yeah, I like it. So I had a cup of that this morning, and it was okay, but I don't know what I'm doing wrong. You know, I'm following the drip, or the pour-over recipe that says you have to twirl it and pour it gently and be patient. And I am a coffee lover, but I don't know if my taste buds are changing or coffee's changing.
Do you need a different kind of grind? Or
I've been experimenting. I need a coffee guru.
Wow. You know, well, I'm a coffee addict like many of us.
Yeah, I am too.
How do you do it?
Well, drip. But
her husband makes mud.
He does. Mm-hmm. Yes, he does. But I've gotten used to it. Mm-hmm. And the grind that I like is Italian. The one that we get is at the...
Roastery?
No, at the...
Burton.
Burton store.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's a good... I like that coffee.
And they have what it's called Milano.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
Is that the brand?
No, the brand is Stewart Brothers.
It's one of the Stewart Brothers.
Oh, is it?
It is.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they grind it, or you can get it in beans.
So Milano is the type of coffee.
Italian, and it harkens me back to, because the best cup of coffee I ever had was in Rome, and it was in this little pensione, and the woman who ran it was named Silvia, and she made us caffè au lait with Italian coffee. And oh my God, I've tried to repeat that experience for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
This comes close because it's dark and mellow.
I'll try it.
Although now I'm telling my secrets.
Okay, good.
And people rave about it, so it's really good, like a really good pot of coffee. It's like
you do have good coffee.
I do have good coffee, but you know what I'll do sometimes is I'll if I'm thinking like, oh, it's not doing it for me, then I get that powdered espresso that's instant, and I'll add a couple teaspoons of that in there, and it kind of rounds out the actual flavor of the coffee if you want a really flavorful.
And it's bolder.
It's bolder, yeah. And for some reason, it adds.
And it's not bitter.
Not bitter.
You know, that's my kind of, I always have it. It's my kind of go-to, the little jar of Migliadoro in my pantry. Because if I ever run out of coffee, I always have that and a can of sweetened condensed milk.
Ooh, yeah.
Ooh, that
And then
sounds
you get
good.
Cuba coffee.
Yeah.
Cuba coffee. And, you know, so then you don't have to be angry that you let yourself run out of coffee.
Migliadoro,
you can have a treat.
That's true.
Yeah.
Is instant espresso? Is
yeah.
That?
And it's a little Mexican flag looking kind of jar.
Ew,
red
yum.
And green.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good.
And it's really intense.
Yeah.
It's really good when you cook with chocolate, if you add that to chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
It adds another dimension to the to the chocolate flavor and keeps all your guests up late at night.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Anyway, I just wondered if anybody had any advice, and I'm glad you did, Susan.
Yeah.
Because I'll try it. I'm just kind of desperate, really. You know how dissatisfying it is to have coffee after coffee after coffee that doesn't taste right?
Right.
And are you drinking it black or not?
So I like black coffee, but in the morning I like to put a little cream in it and, you know, smooth it out a little bit.
Yeah, that can smooth out almost anything.
Almost anything, yeah. So anyway, if you have any more ideas or techniques or methods, I mean, I've tried through the years, I've tried everything, you know, from cold brew to regular Mr. Coffee to French press to whatever, you know, tried them all. And I think pour over for me is the best.
I was using one of the Italian ones that the pressure comes up from the bottom. And
That mocha thing.
The mocha thing, and I managed to break it in the first 2 weeks. I don't know how I did it. I'm trying to, it blew, or maybe it was time, it was an old one. Somebody gave it to me, and the gasket, one of the side gaskets, so it doesn't hold pressure.
Did it blow up?
It blew out, so.
So you didn't get coffee grounds all over your kitchen?
No, I just got steam in my face.
Ouch, did you get burned?
Could be good for your skin.
No, I am dewy and glowy.
Oh, you
right
are.
Now.
I thought you looked particularly alive this morning.
George Clooney here, baby.
This afternoon, yeah. What beautiful skin.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I got babies behind.
Oh. Those little rosy cheeks.
With liver spots.
Don't say that.
That's what I've got. Yeah.
Oh, I'm just looking at my hands. I got my. I don't have my mom's hands. I have my grandma's hands.
I know.
Hey, we were going to talk about some local stuff that's going on, Tom.
Oh yeah.
And I think one of the things we wanted to touch on was the seaweed farm.
Yeah, it was pretty fascinating. There was a front page article in the Beachcomber, and Islander Mike Sprenger is he's in the permit process to have a seaweed farm. It's going to be 10 acres. It's going to be on the west side, Colvos Passage.
In Colvos, yeah.
And he'll also have some shellfish there. I don't know, they didn't explain in the article really if that's a side product or if it's part of the filtering of the water.
It must be part of the filtering because they do clean the water. Mussels do.
I had, it was funny because I had seaweed this week when I went to Donobori and, oh my goodness, it was so good. I don't know what it was, but it was sort of julienned and crispy, crunchy. And it was fresh seafood. Seaweed.
Different from like a seaweed salad.
Yeah. Oh, it was really good. Yeah. So anyway, that's happening. That's kind of a big deal, and it's got the support of, the Nature Conservancy and some other people, and it's not a tire factory. So
I know.
Yeah, that's a good thing, and it might do some real good stuff for our shoreline.
Yeah,
it
and the filtering and
Susan's done a lot of research on what's going on our shoreline, and plankton and seaweed.
Plankton, seaweed, eelgrass. We need to be restoring the eelgrass too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is an aside, but I heard a heartbreaking story about the manatees in Florida this morning.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they're starving.
They're starving. Yeah. 800 of them died this year.
I did not
800.
And then in the summer, they get the massive red tide. Florida's really sort of at the peak of climate change catastrophe.
Well, because they've done so much development around those, whatever they call them, where the manatees live, that there's they call them nutrients, but it's basically poop.
Yeah.
It's unprocessed sewage that is killing the seagrass that they live on.
Hey, speaking of poop.
Do tell.
I read an article this morning, and I'm going to do more research on it and report next time. But in Latvia right now, there's an excavation site from the 1300s, and it goes back, back farther than that to like 44 BC in this certain place. And what they're doing is researching poop, and because they had communal latrines in some of these places. And what they're finding is that the microbes in our bodies are completely different now than they were back then. Completely
really?
Different.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, and I love that kind of food history stuff and how it's telling them exactly what their diet was in different eras.
In Latvia.
In Latvia.
That is one of the most amazing, I think, things in archaeology and anthropology are that they go back to the things like basically people's trash, garbage, the poop.
I know.
And they can find out so much. They're even I saw another program where they're able to track the DNA from the poop or the we're like 12-year-olds, like the poopy poop, like a poop. But feces, feces is never sounded nice.
Word.
It is.
It's a terrible word.
Scat, but then scat's, I think, I think it's specific with scat.
That, I always think about bears when it's
But the rhinos, they're able to trace DNA. They can now prosecute poachers because they track the DNA from where it was poached to where it was marketed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Using poop and tusks.
Using poop, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so if the animal's missing or was carried off, but the poop is there, they can.
Wow!
Wow!
Super sleuthing.
Make a case, yeah.
Yeah, really? Super sleuthing.
Fecal forensics.
You know, God bless you. Alliteration is my friend.
Fecal forensics. You know, yes.
I see a new show for us. Linda, Susan, Tom. It's time for
fecal forensics.
Stop, ding, 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 ding.
Our poopy potpourri for 200. Oh gosh.
Oh my goodness. Okay, we're digressing here a little bit.
I'm sorry. There was another new thing on the on the island. Oh, I was going to
tell me more.
Oh, okay. So we're talking about the potentially new seaweed farm on the west side of the island, and then the other one that's really exciting is the Green Ginger Building, right in town, right across from Ruby Brink, right behind Urban Bloom and Gather is being leased by Dragon's Head Cidery. And so they're going to actually move the plan is to move their production from their directly at their farm, which is also their home, to this facility, and they're going to redesign it, and it's also going to be a tasting room. So that'll be a really lovely little jewel in downtown.
Are they going to have any food?
They did not say, but I bet they do.
They'll have something.
They have that huge kitchen. Something. Yeah.
There may be a legal requirement to serve some kind of food. Alcohol.
I think there is. So, you know, even snacky kinds of things.
And it seems like that, you know, with that building, there's a huge kitchen.
Well, and it's a pretty big restaurant.
It's a big restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's exciting.
So keep your fingers crossed.
Any timeline on that you know of?
No, they're right now discussing the design of it.
Okay. So it's a while. We're ways out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, with supply chains and that kind of thing as well, you know.
You're right.
I was reading an article about, we were talking earlier about Big John's food. Importers, and they had a whole shipment of goods caught in one of those when the ships were clogged up off of LA and down into Mexico three months ago. Yeah, Big John's lost a lot of their stuff they ordered because it, you know, perishes or whatever happens to it. Some of it went back to Italy. They couldn't get it delivered. So, you know, we need to say thank you to our wonderful underwriters right now.
Heck yeah.
So let's take a minute and say thank you.
VOV programming support is provided by the Hardware Store Restaurant, serving great good food, free Wi-Fi, and signature cocktails in an historic 125-year-old building, the heartbeat of Vashon Island, on the web at thsrestaurant.com.
This portion of Voice of Vashon programming is brought to you by PSCCU, proud to be Washington's Green Credit Union, practicing socially responsible banking by supporting sustainability, job creation, local economies, communities statewide, and our environment. Learn more at psccu.org.
Hello, and we're back. Yes, we do. Thank you, our wonderful underwriters. We couldn't be here without you. There's some more interesting little items that we were talking about earlier in the week. Tom, we were talking about ghee, and you had a wonderful conversation with a friend of yours about ghee.
Oh, yeah.
And Susan, do you know what ghee is?
It's butter.
It's butter.
Butter.
G-H-E-E.
Yeah, it's clarified butter.
Kind of.
So what does that mean?
Yeah, Tom?
Well, my friend Dawn, it's a staple of her kitchen. She was making it. She sent me a picture in text, and she goes, "Oh, look at this!" And I texted back, and I go, "What am I looking at?" Because it was like a bowl of—I couldn't tell what? I thought it was chicken broth because it was bubbly and I couldn't really, you know, and she goes, oh, it's ghee. And I said, you know, I'm a little ghee unknowing. Mm-hmm. Ghee whiz. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it's about. I know I've had it, but I haven't used it. And so I, of course, tortured her. Then of course she was basically, my little claws were in her. And so she had to text me for the next 10 minutes about, well, what is it? How do you make it? What's the deal? What do you use it for? What's the shelf life? And just to explain a little, to sort of round out the explanation, ghee is a butter and, that you cook to reduce, the solids, and they drop down and you go, well, that sounds just like clarified butter. But the difference is clarified butter is sort of a quick process. You just want to remove the solids and then you use the butter so it has a higher burning temperature. It doesn't burn so easily. But ghee, you take it a step further and you wait for it to release all the moisture and then the milk solids get a nutty, brownie sort of flavor, and then you strain it, and it has an amazing shelf life. She said, I think 6 months. Mm-hmm. You don't even have to refrigerate it.
And you can use it instead of coconut oil or any kind of oil, really, because it has such a high heat tolerance.
It's a flavorful fat.
And, you know.
Much like me.
You know, it's really delicious, and the only negative thing I could find out about it was that it may entice additional weight. Oh. And the word used was entice.
I wonder if, like, your body goes, ooh, yeah, I like this. Let's have some more.
Let's put that right on my thigh. Ooh.
Yeah, you know, I thought it was lower in calories than butter, but I guess not.
No, it's not. It's butter.
Shoot.
It's butter.
You know, and there is something so primal about butter in a way to me. Like, you know, when you were a kid and you'd like bite into garlic bread that had so much butter would drip down your cheeks.
Yes.
And you're going like, and the this is life.
Well, really, the bread's like an afterthought.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. It's only
it's
a delivery
whatever bread,
mechanism
it doesn't
for
matter.
The butter.
Yes. Exactly. One of my sons was a butter thief when he was a little tiny kid, when he was a toddler, like two or three. And I'd get up in the morning and he'd been up in the night getting in the fridge and there were butter marks in the butter. No, I mean, he'd just take butter, eat it in the night and go back to bed.
Oh, no, it makes perfect sense. My grandmother, when I used to go visit her and we'd go up to a little corner store that had, you know, the donuts and pastries in the morning, and they'd only have so many, and you know, they'd run out by 9. And I remember sitting with her, and this is what I loved, is she would have basically a butter horn. The name butter horn.
Yeah.
And she would sort of get flack, I think, from my mom or the relatives. She's like, I can't believe you're putting butter on that. And I mean, if I could read her mind, it was, I can't believe you don't put butter on it. And so she'd sort of delicately pick it apart, but sort of take off a little piece with her knife and then butter it and then eat it very delicately. And I think there was probably about a quarter of a stick of butter with each additional butter horn.
I get it. And talking about butter. Terrence O'Donnell was a historian in Oregon. I got to interview him one time, and he thought he just was full of all kinds of quips. And he was talking about his Irish mother, who gave him the best advice ever when he was getting married. And he said, she said to me, now, son, I want you to eat only fresh vegetables, enjoy the bed, and use only butter. And that was her marriage advice for him. Enjoy the bed. Well,
is that juxtaposed with the butter somehow?
It could be, I suppose.
It's a little nervous. Or it makes one.
Do you know, Susan, our show is not that kind of show.
What kind of show?
So, you know, fresh vegetables and butter.
What was it? Enjoyment in the bed?
Yeah.
Butter your bed? No, butter your bread.
Butter your bread.
Oh, my Lord. Let's go on to another subject. Do you know, I suppose you guys are a little nervous, too. I'm a little nervous about prices and indexes and supply chains and, you know, all the stuff that we're dealing with now in the world comes to Vashon eventually.
Yeah. And the opportunistic tendencies of companies just to raise it because they can.
Please, please. That's
the thing that's sort of griping my, chapping my, as my father would say, chaps my ass. Oh, yeah. Can we say that?
Yeah, you can say
okay,
ass.
Chaps my ass.
Good, wasn't that fun?
That was good, I liked it.
So,
want to say it again?
Maybe
later.
I don't want to dilute the potency of that line.
That's right.
Okay.
But thank you.
I've been thinking a lot about budgetary constraints and being resentful of the fact that I can't buy what I want to buy now. Well, I mean, I could, I guess, but some things I'm just not going to spend that much money on. You know, I have a hankering for short ribs. My God, three short ribs are $23.
Uncooked?
Yeah.
Wow.
At the grocery store. So, you know, talking about how to save money when you're on a budget, things are probably going to get kind of short now.
You know, I've decided I'm going to grow the things that are too expensive.
Yeah.
Arugula, artichokes. Of course, kale is not expensive, but I grow it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the stuff that I'm afraid is going to get too
high
gardening.
Price. Well, the other thing that I'm a little worried about is wheat and flour.
Yeah.
USDA is saying that this year is going to be the worst harvest in years and years and years. And last year it was down 14%. Imports of wheat from other countries is way down. And our exports out are way down. Of course, all that report was written before
Russia.
Before Russia. And so now we don't know. Now I don't know how all of that's going to work. But,
well, so does that mean we can use other flours, other types of flour?
Well, we can
time
use
to
other,
move in that direction?
Sure, if we want to. You know, it's hard for me because flour is flour. And I know that, you know, gluten-free and that kind of, you can use rice flour or a lot of different teff, spelt, whatever, you know.
Yeah. I think too, what is, it's one of those things where you kind of scratch your head too. Like sometimes like the things that we spend money on as a society are sort of mind-boggling to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, a $1,200 phone,
right?
But we have a fit when, you know, potato chips go up from $1.99 to $2.29. You know,
I know.
So I think a lot of times, like there is certainly outrage for you know, or not. It's not outrage.
It's not really outrage.
No,
it's irritation.
Just irritation,
maybe.
Annoyance that the prices are going up. But there's also. I think we still have like the cheapest food in the world, the United States.
Well, that's another discussion too, because we could go into the gasoline thing, you know, we have it easy here, but we're not going to go into that.
No.
But what I did want to say is, do you know there's a produce stand, a produce store in Soto called McPherson's? Have you been there? I was introduced to that as well last week, and it's called McPherson's, and it's a produce store where the produce is just not quite what you're going to find in Safeway or Fred Meyer. It, you know, the orange might have a little spot on it, or the cauliflower might have that little corner with the, in other words, it's produce that's still fresh and lovely, but you want to use it or freeze it in the next 2 or 3 days. You know, you don't want to take it home and keep it in your fridge for a week.
Is
and
it
a
cheaper?
Half. Oh my. Mm-hmm. The only thing I can remember off the top of my head is green onions, because I use a lot of them. And green onions, I think they're $1.99 a bunch here, and they were 50 cents a bunch.
Ooh.
I mean, that's significant. And you could get a whole head of Romanesco for a buck.
Really?
Yes. 50 cents for an artichoke.
I like to just look at Romanesco. 50 cents for an artichoke.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's worth a trip.
So those are sort of...
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things you can certainly sort of do to, you know, I was over at a friend's house, remain nameless, because we all made fun of her in a very loving way.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things where if you can, it's like such a Vashon thing where you're at dinner and somebody is complaining about the price of Chev.
And the price of Chev.
The Chev.
My God.
And you couldn't even get any. There wasn't even any, you know, God bless her. And but it's one of those things where once you hear yourself say it, you go like, please don't listen to me ever again.
First world problem.
Yeah, really.
Well, I just think really food prices are really going up, and they're going to continue to go up. And so it behooves us to think of certain things that we can do in the kitchen.
Do you ever do coupons?
I can't tell you how many times I've tried coupons.
I know.
Most of what they have in coupons is processed food.
Really and deodorant.
Yeah, yeah and deodorant.
Exactly.
Yeah, that.
Handy wipes.
Yeah, I mean, right. It's stuff like that.
You
yeah.
don't use. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. Or you don't, mm-hmm. you shouldn't use.
Right, right. But on budgets, mm-hmm. speaking of being on Vashon, we can tout the capabilities of Vega and the local farmers and the, what do they call the money, the bucks, the Vega bucks. And
They're like a debit.
It's real money. It's a token, but Vega gives it out. You can get the tokens. Then you go to the farm stand, you pay with the tokens. Mm-hmm. The farmer gives the tokens back to Vega, and Vega gives them cash for what the tokens were worth.
Oh, that's nice.
So it's money. It's actual money.
Oh, it's called the Food Access Partnership.
Thank you. That's yes. Right. Yeah. Karen Biondo's really involved in that.
So is Janie Starr.
And so is Janie Starr, yeah. And they're doing a terrific job. So there's that we can consider.
And it positively affects two groups, people who
exactly.
need fresh produce and mm-hmm. food, and then the people that grow it, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. they get paid mm-hmm. for it.
And so. They get paid for it, yeah. I don't know. Do you have any other ideas about budget kitchen? One thing I was thinking about is batch cooking. You know, if you're cooking on Sunday and you're making yourself whatever you're making for mm-hmm. yourself, it's pretty easy to add a couple of servings to it and freeze them, and that'll save you money later. It doesn't seem like it would, but you know,
it does. Yeah.
It does save you money mm-hmm. if you cook bigger.
No, I definitely do that where mm-hmm. I make like something, it has to be something I really like. It can't be like a partial, So, you know, like really good lasagna, and then that's something that I can at least eat until I'm tired of it, and then I can freeze it mm-hmm. or, mm-hmm. You know, or get a big head of lettuce and have salad for a couple days and, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think also what it certainly is curtailed, you know, eating out for people. I feel bad for restaurants because, you know, you go out and pretty much you can't really do anything for like under $15, and $15 at the grocery store goes a lot farther than, you know.
Well, we were thinking about that last week, actually. So how do we, in this time of budgetary constraints, support our local businesses? How can we help the people mm-hmm. that are here? If you can't afford to go out and spend $40, $50 on dinner, or even $20 or $30 on dinner, how can you help? Well, one thing I can do, I guess, is go, like Ruby Brink, for instance, has mm-hmm. that whole refrigerator section, and they have a pint of bolognese sauce that is to die for. Mm-hmm. And I haven't checked lately, but it used to be $10 a pint, and it will easily feed four people if you go home and fix your noodles. Uh-huh. And it's so good. And that is supporting them. Mm-hmm. And it's letting you have a good meal for very little money. Add a mm-hmm. salad to that. And I don't know, you know, like maybe you could do that with the hardware store or order one of their really good salads to go.
Or like a Sugar Shack, they have all sorts of stuff in there. Gravy has...
In the fridge. And so you're not sitting down to a huge meal and, you know, buying wine and maybe having dessert and spending all that money.
So you're kind of supplementing your food with their food. Yeah.
Or, you know, what I do too is I'll go like if I was at Maze mm-hmm. and I really like their curry. Mm-hmm. And so I'll just order like one, you know, for one person. Mm-hmm. But then what I do is I go home and I put in a package of chicken thighs and chop up a head of broccoli, and I get, you know, it's something I really love.
Wow.
And you get three or four meals out of it.
Wow, that's a great idea.
Just beef it up, so to speak, with vegetables, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. That's a great idea.
Now, you guys are both people who live alone, and you're talking about how to extend your food budget as a single person. Mm-hmm. What about for a family?
Oh, they're on their own.
We don't have no ideas for that.
I don't, you know, I stand in awe of people who cook for a family.
I do too.
Oh my gosh.
But I think, again, that is big cooking, you know, batch cooking. And moms and dads these days who cook for the kids and maybe for a grandparent have my utmost admiration. It's a very difficult, you know, and when you look online or look in magazines for how am I going to save some money, it's all the same stuff. It's the stuff we know. Buy the dry beans, buy the off brands. Don't buy anything that's at eye level in the grocery store.
Yeah, don't go when you're hungry.
Don't go when you're hungry. Mm. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's all I know about.
Yeah, I think it just becomes a sort of due diligence of it's sort of like, you know, what I have to do when I go to a buffet.
Yeah,
I have to think ahead of time,
temper,
and I go
temper,
like,
temper
okay,
yourself.
Yeah, I go like, okay, it's a long 20-foot food fest, and you can't fill up on, you know, some lame-o edamame when you get, you know,
when you get, yeah, you know, get down to the good stuff.
Exactly. So yeah. So you have to, you really do have to sort of plan what it is you're buying and how you're going to use
and
it.
And how you're going to use
and,
it.
And how yeah. you can stretch it out a little bit.
If anybody out there has other ideas, I know that there are people on this island who are feeding families and they're not spending much money. I know there are. I don't know how to do that because it's been a long time since mm-hmm. I've been involved in saving money for kids. You know, like really trying to...
Cooking every day.
Yeah, which I don't do. You
know, yeah, a whole bunch of people.
Boy, don't you... I appreciate what my mom did.
Oh, yeah.
When I got More out on ever. My own, I thought, oh my gosh.
I don't know how my mom did it. I really don't.
Yeah, she had a gob of kids, right?
She had six.
Yeah.
You know, well, anyway, that's another conversation as well. I want to change the subject just a little mm-hmm. bit here.
Sure.
And give a nod to our Irish ancestors.
Aye.
Is that right? Or
are
is
they
that
pirates?
Scottish?
Are we Scottish or pirates?
We're
Scottish Irish pirates.
Yes, that's what we are. I was thinking about Irish coffee the other day, and I thought, I wonder if there's a recipe, because when I make Irish coffee, I just dump it in, and mm-hmm. you know, it's good, it's fine. But there's a trick to it, and sometimes when you're out, there's a place in Portland. Huber's.
Oh,
Huber's downtown. It's the oldest bar in Portland, and they make Irish coffee to die for. I can't make it like that. So I started looking up and I found out how Irish coffee was, how it came about. And it came about in 1942. So was the war.
During World War II, for sure.
Was on
for
then sure. in 1942.
Yeah. World War II.
So a flight full of American passengers was recalled to Foynes Air Base. England, mm-hmm. after struggling against heavy storms for 7 hours. I mean, they'd been out above the ocean in that rickety plane. Oh, anyway, they had to return. They had to go to the airport. So the flight landed and all these people got off the plane and they were bedraggled and haggard and wet and cold and hungry. And there was a chef at the airport. It's an air base, and he was at the air base terminal. And his name was Joseph Sheridan. And he just took a look at the chilly passengers and thought, you know, we always think you need a shot of whiskey or something to warm the cockles, you know, when you're that cold. So he made coffee to warm them up. Mm-hmm. And then he thought, I'll put a shot of whiskey in that. So he put a shot of whiskey in that. And then he put some cream in it. And, of course, the passengers just went wild. They loved it. They loved it. They loved it. And then it changed a little bit through the years. He left that chef job and it became a really important place to have Irish coffee, this particular airport. Then he moved to Shannon, and he went to Shannon and made his Irish coffee at the Shannon airport. And now there's a plaque at the Shannon airport for him and thanking him for his stupendous
contribution.
Oh, yeah. And so then I thought, well, what's the recipe? And lo and behold, there was a recipe. So here's how you do it.
Okay.
If you want to do it for St. Patrick's Day or any other day.
That's right. St. Patty's
Day
is coming
up. 2 days. So, yeah. So this is timely.
So
topic.
Liquor up.
Yeah, so liquor up.
Exactly.
Get your Irish whiskey.
Yeah.
Okay.
And make
so
better coffee.
The ingredients. The mm-hmm. first thing on the ingredients list is a hot teaspoon. 1 measure, 2 ounces, of Irish whiskey, 2 teaspoons brown sugar, 5 to 6 ounces strong black coffee, freshly brewed, 2 teaspoons heavy cream or whipping cream, lightly whipped. Okay, so the deal is you don't put it all in there at once.
Oh.
You put a teaspoon in a bowl with hot water to heat it up. Okay, mm-hmm. so you got to have that teaspoon hot. Let it sit there while you're doing the rest of it. And then they prefer a stemmed whiskey goblet to serve this in, which I've never had. But
we're not heathens.
Yeah, I know. I'm just use a cup. So anyway, Susan, I know this is one of your pet peeves, but they encourage you to pour hot water into the cup to warm the cup up. And then you have to get rid of the water. So anyway, you have to heat the cup up. And then once the heat, once the cup is heated up, oh, it says pour out the water and discard. Add the brown sugar to the bottom of the cup. Then fill it with a strong black coffee and stir it until that sugar is all dissolved.
Mm-hmm.
Really smooth. Then you add the whiskey, stir it again, and let it sit there until it is still, until it is not moving. Then you use your hot teaspoon. You place the spoon backside up in the goblet, you know, so mm-hmm. it's like
an umbrella.
Yes, yes. And then an umbrella.
Yeah, like the upside down boat.
Like, right, yeah.
Or an umbrella.
Okay,
so
okay,
it pours over.
Yeah, yeah. So then you gently pour the prepared whipped cream over the back of the teaspoon.
Wait,
is it whipped cream?
Either way. I mean, lightly whipped cream, it says, not whip. We're not looking for stiff peaks.
It's still
here.
A liquid.
It's still liquid.
Okay.
But
it
could
it
be
no
a little
sugar
bit thicker,
in it?
You know?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it has no sugar. The brown sugar's in the
right,
whiskey.
Right, got it, okay.
So you hold the spoon upside down. I'm envisioning this. Using the hot teaspoon, place the spoon backside up in the goblet.
In the goblet,
and then you.
This is like a Japanese tea ceremony.
It is kind of, and then you pour. But see, I think. Well, anyway,
keep going. Yeah.
Then you pour the whipped cream over the hot teaspoon. Now, gradually raise the spoon as you slowly pour the cream.
And sing Danny Boy.
And this will result in a layer of liquid cream that floats on the top. Uh-huh. Do not stir the cream. And the luxury of a good, proper Irish coffee is that you're really actually sipping the coffee and the whiskey kind of from underneath the cream.
Oh, when it comes
and then,
through.
Yeah. So you kind of, it's kind of a layering thing, and it's a mouthfeel thing, you know. So I found that to be sheer delight.
Yes.
I didn't make one.
It's much more convoluted than a banana daiquiri.
But how much do you love the ceremony and the ritual?
No, absolutely.
I love that.
You know, I don't think of Irish people as being ceremonial and ritualistic when it comes
to drinking
alcohol. Yeah. Usually it's do we have to wait that long?
Yeah. Where's the glass?
This is the longest.
That's only the first cup. Yeah. So after that, it's everything at once.
Like, oh, Jesus, pour is the longest pour I've ever experienced.
Jesus, Mary, and Joseph.
I'm getting old here, man.
Oh, my God.
Old. Give me the damn coffee. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so anyway, that's my recipe for the day.
Do you know, can I tell you, I have a...
I want you to.
Where I had my first Irish coffee.
Yes, do tell.
I was out of college... I remember it because I was sort of felt like I was kind of an adult, like I was out on my own. I was, you know, I had moved to Alaska. I was living in Juneau, Alaska.
How brave.
Totally.
Yes.
And
manly man.
And there was a manly man. I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. But there was the Red Dog Saloon, which was really popular. And this was early on. This was in 79 and 80. So there weren't a lot of cruise ships that came into the town. So it was pretty much in its original state. Like, you know, the curbs were 2.5 feet off the side of the road. You'd fell over, you'd break a leg, you know.
They had no lawyers.
Snow. Yeah, exactly. So, and the town was right in the mountains.
It was rough and tumble.
Rough and tumble. And I lived up on Star Hill, which was these old mining sort of cabins. But what was so great about remembering, as you tell the story, I remembered that it was the first time I ever had Irish coffee, and it was the Alaskan Bar, which was a really cool old bar right on Front Street by the water. And it was like all these really cool people that were Alaskans. And I was sitting there and it was like some freezing January or February. Brr. And I was having an Irish coffee because that's what you had. And it was just one of those moments where I felt like, wow, things have changed in my life. And I just, but I remember that it was like,
Tom.
It sort of amplified that drink as I remember it being like, just like the best cup of coffee I ever had in my life.
It's really
something.
Did it make
you feel like a grown-up?
Like a grown-up.
Yeah.
Like I was
yeah.
like, oh man, I'm having an adventure here.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a good drink. And the other good hot drink I like is hot toddy, which is just brandy and honey and lemon and hot water.
There's I'm thinking of hot buttered rum.
There's, oh, there's that.
Oh,
there's
yeah, that's good too.
Hey, you know who makes the best hot ruddered bum?
Rudder bum, no.
You just did a
back,
whole new
back
thing.
To dirty talk.
Right. We like to go that way sometimes. It is Sabrina at the Eagles.
Oh.
The best hot buttered rum ever in your whole life. And I know what she uses. She uses melted vanilla ice cream in the base of the mix. She's happy to give you the recipe.
You know, that is a conscientious bartender.
That's
Isn't somebody
it?
Who cares about the poor and the ultimate outcome of the drink.
And the eager people.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, we're just really out of time again.
Doggone it.
We missed a couple of subjects, didn't we?
Yeah, but you know what? We just keep piling them up on the back end.
Yeah, and it'll come out sometime.
Food,
yes.
You know, food is always there.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And to our underwriter, Susan, thank you for helping us out today.
My pleasure.
Your presence
I'm
is
starving.
Always welcome.
You are a island treasure.
A star in
it's
my
true.
Book.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Tom. Bye.
Hey, bye, Linda.
It was really good to see you, and I'll
you
see you
best.
Soon.
You
the best. No, you the best.
Oh, stop it. You are.